Chapter 22. Construction begins. Wednesday morning, I again awoke to the sounds of roosters crowing and a bus honking its horn for riders. But the knocking at my door early in the night, though at first frightening me, brought the best news of all. Standing at my door was a member of the Alcaldía and a man he introduced as my new stonemason, Carlos. Carlos was wearing an old t-shirt and appeared slightly overweight, but this time I immediately knew in my heart he was the right man sent for the job. After a firm handshake, he agreed to meet me at 7 o'clock to have breakfast at the cafe. During breakfast, I showed Carlos several pictures on my phone taken of the bridge construction in El Chocón, El Salvador, including pictures of the stones used to build the main structures. He was amazed at the large stone tiers and the tall stone walls of the approach ramp. I pointed at the picture on my phone and then at him, as if to ask, "Can you build this?" "Sí," was his response, showing a slight grin. The ride to the bridge site that morning was again a time for me to enjoy looking at the beautiful mountains and the rising sun, a chance to take in the splendor of God's creation. I felt so blessed to be given this opportunity to be able to give back to God's people a portion of the blessings I had received in my own life. Arriving at the bridge site, I saw that Santos had already arranged the wheelbarrow, shovels, and one screen sifter. Others had completed nailing a large portion of the barbed wire fence to the new post. With most of the site preparation work now completed and a new stonemason hired, we were finally ready to begin construction. Carlos arrived not long after I did. We walked down to the bridge site where I showed him the excavation, the stone piles, and the sand. I introduced him to Santos and then to the other workers. At that moment, I looked over at Santos and told him, "Dos cemento." Santos turned and instructed one of the men. Within minutes, the man had returned with the wheelbarrow loaded with two bags of cement. Walking over to the sand pile, I pointed at the small cleared area and said, "Plástico." Santos acknowledged, "Sí." This time, Santos went himself up the hill to the small block house where the construction tools and other materials were stored. He returned with a large piece of black plastic, placing it on the ground in front of the pile of sand. I picked up the screen sifter and motioned for Santos to grab the other end. Carlos instinctively grabbed the shovel and scooped the shovel of sand into the screen sifter. After a few failed attempts, Santos learned the shaking motion required to move the larger pebbles in the screen sifter around so that the smaller granules of sand could freely fall through the screen. The large pebbles were then discarded by simply flipping the screen sifter over. The sifted sand formed a pile on the black plastic where it could be easily shoveled into the 5-gallon buckets without any dirt or grass contaminants. The whole process would be repeated until 8 buckets were filled and emptied in a pile near the excavation. The 8 buckets equaled the amount of sand needed to make one batch of mortar, which is commonly referred to as mezcla, or mixture. The sand-to-cement ratio in one batch of mortar is 4-to-1, thus the need to buy the whole truckload of sand. Everyone took turns shoveling sand into the screen sifter, using the screen sifter, and carrying the buckets filled with sand to the cleared area beside the excavation. When the 8th bucket of sand was emptied onto the pile, the 2 bags of cement were busted open and poured onto the pile. The sand and cement were then slowly mixed together like the sugar and flour of a homemade cake. As the light gray cement was folded in with the black sand, the mixture's color became a dark gray. I knew Carlos had done this before because it would have been very difficult for me to explain the next step, making the infamous volcano. Though none of the design manuals I had read recommended this method of mixing the cement, this appeared to be the method of choice in developing countries like El Salvador and Nicaragua. After thoroughly mixing the sand and cement, Carlos took his shovel and began pulling the powdery mix away from the center, forming the walls of the volcano. Then he took a 5-gallon bucket that had been filled with water from the river and poured it in the center. He did the same with the second bucket of water, this time pouring more slowly, careful not to stress the walls of the volcano. Carlos let the water soak into the wall of sand for several minutes. This gave me a chance to reflect back to the construction at the El Chocón Bridge in El Salvador, counting in my mind how many volcanoes I helped mix. As Carlos began moving his shovel around the outer wall, I remember thinking, now the real work begins. I grabbed the shovel from Santos and began helping Carlos fold in the outer edges, putting more and more of the dry sand cement mixture into the watery center. It was a slow process. Shovel too much or too quickly, and the volcano's wall would break, causing a big lava flow. Eventually, the wall was intentionally broken to allow for all of the dry mixture to be thoroughly mixed with the water. Once this was done, shoveling and folding the heavy mixture became harder and tiresome. Thankfully, two men stepped forward to grab the shovels and help finish the mixing process. The only test for the mixture's consistency was dipping a masonry trowel into the mortar and judging how firm it appeared as it rolled off the edge of the trowel. If it was too dry, sprinkle in more water. Too wet, add in more sand. After about 10 minutes, the first official batch of mortar was ready. Carlos was the first to jump into the excavation and start standing up the larger, flatter stones, placing one beside the other. To my surprise, it only took 3 of the large stones to make the width of the 60-centimeter foundation wall. Note, a stone is weakest when laid flat and strongest when stood on its side. Having helped lay the stones in the approach walls for the bridge in El Salvador, I could tell Carlos knew exactly what he was doing. After standing enough stones to form the first 10 feet of the foundation wall, Carlos grabbed a bucket he had filled with mortar and began pouring it over the stones. The mortar was slightly superior in consistency than what would be used in building a brick wall, but its purpose was not to make a thick mortar joint between the stones, but to serve as a bonding agent for the stones. Making an observation, I stopped Carlos and grabbed a few of the smaller stones and showed him how they could be used to fill in the voids between the larger stones. Simply taking a little extra time to fill these voids would not only reduce the amount of mortar wasted running into these voids, but in the end would save the project money. Carlos nodded his head in agreement and grabbed a handful of the smaller stones to show the other men, which now gave everyone something to do. By the end of the day, one complete layer of stone and mortar had been completed for the entire circumference of the foundation tier. With the start of the second layer of stones, the walls were now well defined. Most notable of the day's progress was that the center of the excavation was almost completely vacant of the larger stones. Packing my tools, I saw Carlos checking the dimensions of the foundation. He suddenly appeared to be upset. I hurriedly jumped into the excavation to try and understand the problem. With his tape measure, he hastily measured the length of the wall's interior. The two longer interior sides were not the same length. I helped him measure across each diagonal to make sure the foundation was square. It wasn't. Somehow I had made an error when laying out the foundation tier. Since it was time to go home, I simply stated mañana or tomorrow. That night in my motel room, I reopened the email on my phone from Milos, which showed all of the dimensions of the bridge's foundation tier. I carefully made a sketch in my notebook, calculating the measurements for the interior diagonals and labeling all the lengths in centimeters. Based on my field notes taken the previous day, the overall excavation measured slightly larger than it needed to be, which was good. For the foundation tier in the ground, I knew the outer dimensions weren't as significant as the inner ones. One crucial detail was that the rectangle formed by the inner walls of the foundation tier needed to be perfectly square, since the second tier's walls would be inset half of the width of the foundation tier's walls, which for this reason were required to be a minimum of 60 centimeters wide. In order for the mechanical forces of the bridge's cables and walking platform to be evenly distributed throughout the tiered structure. Each tier had to be constructed on top of the previous tier in this manner. The finished tiered structure would actually resemble a traditional wedding cake. So with each tier affecting the next, any discrepancies between the design and what was already built had to be resolved. I arrived early to the bridge site Thursday morning, hoping to be there before Carlos, but I wasn't. Carlos had already helped Santos bring all of the construction tools down from the small house near the bridge site, which had an attached room with a door that could be locked. Carlos and Santos were now busy sifting more sand to be mixed with the four bags of cement stacked nearby. I showed them a big smile and a thumbs up as I walked over to the excavation pit, hoping only minor corrections would be needed. Three young men were there tossing more of the larger stones into the middle of the excavation. I simply said, "Alto," which means stop, before climbing into the excavation. Carlos was right behind me. I pulled out my notebook and showed Carlos the sketch of the foundation, pointing to the measurements labeled on each side, including on the diagonals. We first measured the overall length and width of the excavation itself. I already knew these were good, but needed for Carlos to put his trust in the dimensions I had labeled on the sketch. I recorded all the measurements and then wrote each one beside the corresponding location on the sketch. I showed Carlos that each of our measurements were slightly greater than those on the sketch, and then gave him the thumbs up sign. I already knew the width of the walls were 10 centimeters more than required by the design, which would compensate for the larger than needed excavation. The interior measurements were next. We measured the interior wall of the one side I knew was correct. To my surprise, three of the interior wall's lengths were correct, which relieved Carlos of his initial concerns, as well as my own. This meant none of our work from the previous day would have to be redone. The fourth side's interior measurement, however, was 15 centimeters, about 6 inches, too long. I recorded these measurements directly on the sketch. As I studied the sketch, it immediately became apparent to me what needed to be done to correct the foundation. To make the interior rectangle truly square and the tier dimensions correct for the placement of the next tier, all we needed was to construct one additional row of stones on the inside of the back wall. Santos helped me measure and move one corner stick that needed 15 centimeters. This was all that was needed to square up the foundation tier. Since I felt fully responsible for the confusion this mistake had caused, I took it upon myself to fix it. I picked a couple of skinny stones that were tall and close to the needed width and stood them on their end. I got a bucket, filled it with freshly mixed mortar, and quickly added some mortar to the first layer. As I looked at the progress I had made and how good a job I was doing, I decided to go ahead and add a second layer of stones, just to bring my work even with Carlos's progress for that morning. However, as I quickly found out, it is very important to let the mortar sufficiently dry before adding additional layers of stones. As I placed the last stone to complete the second layer of the small addition, the stones in the first layer started to shift. I quickly sat down and pressed my chest against the wall of stone, stretched out both arms, and placed my hands on two of the larger stones. I did everything possible to prevent the stones from falling, but it was too unstable. The stones and wet mortar came crumbling down, landing either in my lap or around where I was sitting. The addition to the interior wall was now a complete mess. Carlos came over and grinned, then handed me another bucket of mortar so that I could start over. Within 10 minutes, I had once again completed the first layer of stones, but this time I stopped and let the mortar dry for several hours before adding the second layer. By the end of the workday on Thursday, the string had once again been raised, and work had started in one corner on the fourth layer of stones. I took a few pictures of the foundation with my phone before packing up my tools. Walking to the road to wait for my ride back to town, I felt kind of sad, knowing this was my last work day at the bridge. But looking back at the construction site, I became excited, anxious to email Milos the picture showing our progress. That night in bed, I reflected back on everything that had happened in the past year surrounding the bridge project, the site survey, the fundraising, and now the construction. The bridge project had not only given me fulfillment, but my heart was filled with joy. My pastor had already told me that the story of the $10 bills was an incredible story, but what about the rest of the story? Would anyone believe everything that had happened in my life surrounding the bridge project? Maybe my next calling would be to write that book I had told Avery someone needed to write during our trip last April, if the funds were raised and the bridge actually got built.